Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Dr. Janet Baker. She's the curator of Asian art at the Phoenix Art Museum. We're talking about the Wondrous Worlds, Art and Islam Through Time and Place exhibition. This exhibition is actually on loan from the Newark Museum. There's so much I didn't know about Islamic art, so it was really great to find out. I think this is such a beautiful and relevant exhibition. Enjoy! So how's your day been today?
So far, so good.
Cool. Let me find my notes. Hang on one second. Oh, here they are. Okay. So tell me about this exhibition, Art and Islam, Through Time and Place.
Yes. This exhibition called Wondrous Worlds, Art and Islam Through Time and Place, is featuring over 100 objects, all of which are on loan from the Newark Museum in New Jersey. And we are very proud to be one of the 6 national venues for this show.
Wow. So how did you guys get picked? What was the criteria for places to choose to exhibit this?
Originally, the curator of this exhibition, Catherine Ann Paul, a longtime colleague of mine, reached out to me and other members of the American Association of Asian Curators,
Oh.
a very small group, actually,
Yeah.
and announced that she had organized this exhibition. It would be showing at Newark, and it would be available to travel to other venues. So I emailed her back and said, I'll be in New York next month. I'll come out and see it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was the start.
Cool.
Not too many people have been to the Newark Museum, I'm discovering.
Yeah.
All you have to do if you're in Manhattan is get on a New Jersey transit train, and in 17 minutes, you hop off, and there you are.
Cool. Yeah, it's pretty much a stone's throw from there. It's pretty far from you guys.
Yes, so 3 years ago, this January, I saw it there. It was stunning. Newark is an extraordinary museum that was founded in 1909, about the time of the Gilded Age in the New York area, and combined with it being a port city with many immigrants passing through, they have built an extraordinary collection.
Mm-hmm.
Their original founder and a few other people were men who traveled the world, you know, went to places like North Africa and Asia and Europe.
Right.
Bought lots of marvelous things, brought them back to Newark. Founded a museum.
Cool.
Now they have 33,000 like Asian art objects.
Nice. How fortunate for us. That's really...
Yes, the Phoenix Art Museum's Asian collection, as wonderful as it is, does not have a strength in Islamic art. So this is something we've never been able to feature for our audiences before.
Right.
So when I visited and saw the exhibition, I thought, well, gotta have it.
Yeah.
And after I made a mad dash to Newark Airport and went through TSA and sat at my gate waiting to board my flight back to Phoenix, I thought more about it. I whipped out my phone, I emailed Catherine, and I said, put us on the list for prospective venues.
Yeah.
And I boarded my flight and came back to Phoenix. That was 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Here it is. On view until May 26th.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic. And I'm very unfamiliar with Islamic art, and I actually wasn't sure that they even... did art, and I'm completely ignorant, so if I'm asking insensitive type questions, please forgive me. But I mean, I didn't think art was their thing. Although I've seen a lot of patterns and stuff. I've heard several different things. So
there's your clue. Well, much of what we call Asian art, which spans thousands of years in 38 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Is things that were used in people's everyday life, or buried with the dead,
mm-hmm.
or used in religious devotion. It was not artworks created just to hang on the wall and look pretty.
Uh-huh.
So much of what you will see in this exhibition includes things like sumptuously decorated books,
uh-huh.
beautifully created ceramics, metalwork with inscriptions cast into them, textiles, carpets, things that people use as part of their everyday life.
Functional
and
things.
The exhibition also spans over 1,000 years in time,
mm-hmm.
from the 9th to the 21st century,
mm-hmm.
and objects from 6 continents.
Wow.
Well, the reach of the Islamic world was very large.
Yeah.
And that is really due to 2 things. One is it is unified by a common language, that is Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that one of the 5 pillars of Islam, the 5th pillar, is pilgrimage to Mecca,
mm-hmm.
which hopefully all devout Muslims will aspire to do at least once in their lifetime.
To get there eventually.
Health and finances permitting.
Right.
And so pilgrimage became a way that people traveled in previous centuries,
mm-hmm.
Which of course would not have been by air, but would have been by land or sea or both.
Right.
It took time. They
mm-hmm.
brought things along on their journey that they might buy and sell to pay for food and lodging. And that really facilitated the exchange of goods, of ideas, of objects of beauty, and patterns, which you've referred to.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps one of the most long-standing influences of Islamic art is an emphasis on abstract, geometric, and floral patterns.
Uh-huh. They're beautiful. So yeah, I love this. This is, and I love the patterns. I love the forms. I think it's great.
One of the things that's particularly outstanding about this exhibition is works connected with the art of calligraphy, the art of rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
Writing, because literacy was greatly prized
mm-hmm.
in the ancient world. Of course, not everyone learned to read and write.
Right.
And learning to read and write was closely linked with, learning to read and write the Quran,
mm-hmm.
The sacred revelation of God to Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
So the art of book illustration is highly sophisticated in the Islamic world,
mm-hmm.
and there are a number of beautiful works, not only of the Quran, but works of poetry, mathematics, science, many of which are illustrated, a reverence for the written word, high-quality paper, leather-bound books, and luxurious pen cases and styluses and inkwells. There's an entire room devoted to the art of writing.
Wow.
And that continues into the 20th century,
wow.
21st century.
That's amazing, because my mother does calligraphy, and she would totally love this, the pen work that they
yes.
do. I love their books. So they have a whole room adopted.
One of the rooms in the exhibition is devoted to objects that either are the written word or books, or objects that have inscriptions or sacred words inscribed or cast onto them.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So it says that it's organized around the wondrous world is organized around the 5 pillars of Islam rather than geography.
Yes.
So do you have like 5 different rooms for the 5 different pillars, or how does that work?
Not quite. The first room in the exhibition is devoted to showing 1 or 2 objects that represent each of the 5 pillars of Islam.
Okay.
And those are profession of faith,
mm-hmm.
daily prayer, charity, ritual fasting for Ramadan,
mm-hmm.
and pilgrimage to Mecca.
Uh-huh.
And then as you move through the exhibition, you see how those 5 pillars have an influence on the type of works of art that were created and used in traditional Islamic life.
Mm-hmm.
For example, charity also is a part of what's displayed in another room, and that has to do with hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Charity we tend to think of as those who have more than enough give to those who do not have enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also reflected in hospitality, the relationship between a guest and a host.
Right.
And how you reciprocate with each other to express gratitude in that relationship. It's also reflective of your relationship with God.
Uh-huh. Cool.
And then other aspects of the exhibition, for example, hospitality is also related to charity and general concept of sharing, and as well the whole month of Ramadan, in which one fast from sunup to sunrise, results in a feast at the end of the day when the sun sets. Oh. So you have gone a long day with no food and no drink from Definitely. The time you arose until the time set.
Yeah.
And then it is a time to share each other's company, Definitely. To share food and drink and song and music, to celebrate a day which is really representative of spiritual renewal and discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, you eat the food on the beautiful plates.
Yes, absolutely. And some of the plates are beautifully ornamented, actually depicting things that you might be eating. For example, animals that have been hunted. That might include goats and sheep or fowl, for mm-hmm. example.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, these are absolutely fantastic. I saw the pictures, and they're just beautiful. So what about self-purification through fasting? How does that kind of play into the art?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that.
How does the self-purification through fasting tenet play into the art?
Mostly through the idea of feasting after the fast during the day.
That's so right. That's right. You did say
during
that.
The month of Ramadan, so that would be four solid weeks. During daytime, for example, you not only would not eat or drink anything, you would also not smoke, not engage in, shall we say, marital relations,
mm-hmm.
and avoid sinful thoughts or actions.
Ah.
So that is a long span of time to be very focused on your personal discipline.
Right, right.
And then when that day comes to an end, you can basically relax and restore yourself through feasting, relaxation, company, song, and dance. So it is kind of a combination of penance and celebration for a full month.
Right, right. Wow. Yeah, I couldn't do the fasting part. I like to eat too much.
No, and when you think about the fact that it also includes not drinking anything,
right.
I get thirsty just thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't live without coffee. That's But yeah, that's but I applaud them for their discipline. That's very, very strong. That's a very strong thing to do, and it's and restraint is definitely good. I just could not do it.
Indeed, in Christian practice, the only thing that even comes close to it is the idea of giving something up for Lent. But I don't think that quite matches the idea of spending a month not eating all day long.
Right. Well, I mean, in my church, people do fast occasionally, but I could never do it. So I mean, there is the concept of fasting. I've heard of that concept in Christianity.
Yes, that's true.
But in Lent as well. That's something I could never do. So what has the response been to this?
The response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
We have had wonderful written reviews, both local and even global. For example, the Asian Art newspaper, which I read regularly, is an online global newspaper, mm-hmm. and so we made that.
Cool.
We've also had very high traffic in the exhibition, and I've received emails even from individuals thanking me for presenting this so that our audiences here in the Southwest can learn more about a faith that I think, first of all, most people don't know too much about.
Right.
To be quite frank, I learned about the five pillars of Islam in seventh grade social studies class, which for me was quite a few years ago.
Right, right.
And secondly, I think we wanted to present this because we wanted to lend a positive light to the national dialogue regarding the faith of Islam.
Right, right. Right, because it is portrayed in such a negative way, and I don't think people know a whole lot about it.
Yes.
I mean, I think that might be true of any religion. You tend to hear just the bad things about it.
Yes, I think that's true. Right now we're hearing a lot of bad news about Catholicism, but that certainly doesn't mean that everyone who follows that faith is to be put into a bad light.
Exactly.
If one reads history, one realizes that conflict and even warfare has been a part of world history and religious tolerance or intolerance for centuries.
Absolutely.
This is nothing new.
No.
And the other thing that I have found that most people don't realize is that Islam is connected to Christianity and Judaism.
Right, it's Judeo-Christian.
Because they all find their roots in the Hebrew traditions of Moses, of Abraham,
right.
The Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the ongoing monotheistic traditions that have evolved out of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they all share the same Old Testament.
Yes.
Or the same, same text.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, they don't all call it the Old Testament, but I mean, it's the same text. So, yeah, I think that's. There's just so much. You're so right. We just don't know much about it, and I know from I'm a Christian, and I know that people tend to focus on the bad parts of Christianity, and that's certainly not the whole picture. And I know several Muslims, and they're all just fantastic people, and it's just
I've met a number of wonderful members of the Greater Phoenix Muslim community in the last 6 months or so,
mm-hmm.
through planning this exhibition.
Right. So that's I think this is a fantastic exhibition. I'm so glad you guys are doing it.
Thank you. So. And you know, globally, I did a little fact checking. Islam is the fastest growing faith in the world.
Wow.
And today, roughly 25% of the world's population is Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the second largest religion in the world after all Christian faiths combined.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And since it is continuing to grow, that is something that we really, it's in everyone's best interest for us not to ignore.
To know about it.
To better understand.
And to engage it.
Yes.
So, have you had any backlash from anyone?
I think there might have been one email that had a slightly negative voice to it.
Right.
But other than that, no.
Right. Well, that's good. I mean, I think it's so important to learn about other religions, other besides your own. And I just think that it's smart for other people to know about, even non-religious people to know about the different religions and what goes on in them. And so you don't hear the news and just kind of make snap decisions or snap assumptions.
Because ultimately all faiths in the world have the common goal of answering certain fundamental questions about our existence. Who are we? Why are we here?
Right.
How should we conduct our lives on this earth?
Right.
And though the approaches may be different, the common human need to answer those questions should transcend our differences.
Oh, absolutely.
Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen.
No. No, not at all. But yeah, I think stuff like this, I think there needs to be more stuff like this, more Islamic stuff, more Christian stuff, more Catholic stuff. I mean, more just all kinds of religions. I just think art and religion is just amazing. I think it's just
so
interesting.
That's actually my personal focus. But I can tell you right now that if you come to visit Wondrous Worlds at Phoenix Art Museum,
mm-hmm.
Directly across the hall is a gallery that is filled with paintings that have images of Christ,
mm-hmm.
And also have nude figures.
Uh-huh.
So it's an interesting contrast.
Yeah, totally.
And the Asian Gallery, over the time that I've been here, which is about 19 years,
wow,
frequently features works from different faiths that are represented in the countries of Asia,
uh-huh.
Buddhism, Hinduism, and as of 2 years ago, we now have a dedicated Sikh art gallery,
oh, wow,
at Phoenix Art Museum. And in the last 2 years, there have been 3 exhibits in that, and I am working on planning the 4th one right now.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Like, what kind of, I know nothing about Sikhism, so I'm sure no.
I found a generous benefactor who realized that the way to allow the Sikh community of Phoenix to better understand the history of their own faith, as well as everyone else, to mm-hmm. do the same, was to endow a space in the museum dedicated to presenting Sikh art.
Mm-hmm.
He's also been collecting for 10 years, so we have a wealth of material that can be displayed.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's interesting that you say that for the Sikhs to understand their own faith, because a lot of American and European art is basically was started out as religious art, and so that's why a lot of it is. And that's when I was taking art history, it was kind of like a Bible class almost.
Indeed.
I was learning a lot about
it. Particularly from in the medieval period and the early Renaissance,
mm-hmm.
Most of the work that you're looking at is related to the church.
Right, right. And I just think that's so fascinating. And I think that's the best way to learn, really, through art.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
We encourage people to do that over here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. So how I mean, I'm sure there's a Sikh population here in Charlotte, but I don't know how big it is. So how large do you think your Sikh population is in Phoenix?
In the greater Phoenix area, is the estimate is 4,000 to 5,000.
Wow.
There are three major Sikh gurdwaras or temples.
Mm-hmm.
In the Phoenix area, and one of them, which recently completed construction just a few years ago, there had been a community gathered there, but their actual building was only completed a few years ago, is located 7 blocks from Phoenix Art Museum.
Wow. Wow, how fortunate.
So,
that's awesome.
That's a nice relationship to cultivate.
Yeah, totally. Totally, because, I mean, that's just not something you think, I mean, I don't know, that's just not, even when you're naming the religion, the world religions, that's not one, that's one you tend to overlook. So, I mean, I think that's amazing that A, there's such a large population of them, and you know, and B, that the things are, I don't know, I just think it's great.
Well, the world population of Sikhs is estimated at 25 million today.
Wow.
The religion is based in northwest India, but in the 19th century, many Sikhs began immigrating to the U.S., to Canada, to elsewhere in the world. And I've noticed since I began working with this benefactor that there are more and more Sikhs who are involved in positions of public office and government and such, so that, you know, it's not always obvious that that's their faith.
Right, right. Wow. That is so cool. So you do art and religion, basically. Is that's your...
Not exclusively. I'm, as curator of Asian art, that allows me to enjoy presenting work from about 6,000 years and 38 countries in the world.
Wow.
Asia is a third, going on a half of the world's population.
Yeah, it's big.
So I have a lot to cover. I'm never bored.
I can imagine. that was a good field, good choice to focus on. That's because you never get bored. So that's very cool. So what's your favorite part?
What's my favorite part?
Yeah.
People who don't know much about museums often ask me, so what does a curator do?
Mm-hmm.
And my standard answer is, I get to look at beautiful works of art, meet fascinating people and travel to wonderful places.
Absolutely.
And those are the three highlights of the job.
Yeah.
Of course, I also, you know, have to sit down and work on the budget and go to staff meetings and work out logistics like, okay, how are we going to install this object and what can we fit in what space? I have 5,558 square feet in the museum,
uh-huh.
and frequently works of art on view need to be changed because they are either paper, works on paper, or textiles, and uh-huh. we have to be sure that they don't get too much exposure to light.
Right.
So twice a year I have a 2-week window of time in which things in the Asian gallery get changed,
mm-hmm.
and that keeps it fresh.
Yeah. So do you know how to change all that out? Do you know how to install it and everything, or do you hire people to do it?
Well, we have a crew that does the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
Moves crates, things like that, but it's pretty much my call, what's going to go on view, what
where.
The topics and themes will be, what objects are going to be included, what it's going to say on the labels and the wall text,
mm-hmm.
and how it's going to look. Yes.
Right. See, that's so cool. That's why I interviewed curators, because I just think that's so fascinating that there's such an art to your job. I mean, an art besides the art that you exhibit, obviously, but I think there's just such a just the planning, the organization, and just the how you map out the exhibitions. I think that's a total art in itself.
Oh, it is. One thing I mentioned one time to somebody about it is I said, exhibit installation is where scholarly research meets interior decorating.
I love it.
Because you really do need to present it with all of the information that tells people what they're looking at, why it's important,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. But
right.
It has to look nice, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And and tell them why it's important, because, I mean, I think, yeah, it's they might not realize how important it is. And I think just the way you guys can, you know, lay things out so that this is here and this is there, and I don't know.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, totally. So very cool. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, Janet. This has been fantastic.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, and I definitely want to chat with you again because it sounds like you're doing some great things at the Phoenix Art Museum, and I love Asian art.
Well, I'll tell you, currently, Wondrous Worlds, Art and Islam Through Time and Place, occupies all of the square footage in the Asian Gallery.
Oh, wow.
So when that gets packed up in late May,
mm-hmm.
and then opening in the summer, I will have reinstalled the entire Asian Gallery with 5 new themes and a number of objects that have been recently gifted to the museum that have never been on view before.
What kind of stuff?
Oh, I'll fill you in. I'm working on that right now. Indonesian textiles,
mm-hmm.
Contemporary Japanese ceramics,
mm-hmm.
Japanese Ikebana flower arrangement baskets,
wow.
Chinese painting, snuff bottles, cricket cages.
What's
at
that?
An exhibition celebrating the 550th anniversary of the birth of the founder of Sikhism.
Oh, wow. What are cricket pages?
Cricket cages.
Cages.
Crickets were a popular pet in traditional China, although the practice still goes on, I've discovered in a recent visit to Shanghai. Crickets are the ideal pet. They're small. They don't make much mess. And you put them in a little small container with ventilation, and you can slip them in your pocket or have them on your desk.
Oh, my gosh.
And they make a lovely chirping sound. Slightly smaller than a songbird.
That's true. I never thought about it. Well, now I'll look at cricket.
The so-called last emperor of China, in the movie that was made by Bertolucci back in the 1980s, he had a cricket that he kept as a pet in a little cricket cage that he slipped in his pocket.
Oh, wow. That's crazy because I get crickets in the house all the time, and I'll look at them differently. They're my pets. Oh, that's amazing. I didn't realize how perfect they were. You're absolutely right.
Yes. they don't live too long, then you get a new one.
That's true. That is absolutely true. I look at them in a whole new light now. That's amazing.
Low maintenance, pleasant sound, yes.
They're kind of creepy to look at, though.
Oh. Kind of elegant in a way, though.
A little bit. They don't seem too cuddly, though.
No, they're not cuddly. Not warm and furry, no.
No.
Non-mammalian pets are, not something you curl up with on the couch.
Well, you might be able to, but only once. Oh, this is so great. Thank you so much for chatting with me, Janet.
Thank you for calling, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Awesome, absolutely. Thank you so much to Dr. Janet Baker for chatting with me about the Wondrous World, Art and Islam Through Time and Place exhibition. If you're in the Phoenix area, it goes until May 26th, 2019. If you go, please share pics and tell me about it on the Let's Talk Art with Brooke Facebook page. Thanks for listening. This episode is produced by me, Brooke Musterman, for Hot Spur Media.